Alex, welcome back again, as usual, as always. We've got a very special episode this week with a special guest.
Very special episode.
That's right. We'll introduce here in just a minute. But before we get into that, let's run through the news, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. Man, I can't resist wanting to unmute myself during our jingle and like invent lyrics to it. But I'm afraid that if I do that, something horrible will happen. I just want you to know that.
We should probably have some kind of lyrics contest or something like that. And maybe during the holidays.
Yeah. One of these days, I'm just going to start rapping mid-jingle. Yeah. And everyone's going to be like, what in the world?
I love it. Well, we'll all stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, we're going to run through the news real quick. We want to leave as much time as we can for our very special guests. A couple of items. North Sky launched their social app this week. Was super excited to see that. And if you haven't caught my conversation with Eve Osman from the North Sky crew, dropped that on Monday. It was such a lovely conversation, and I was so happy with the feedback that episode got. Everybody seemed to really pick up the messages that Eve was dropping, and she's got so many fun projects. Obviously, I think most folks know her from North Sky. Have you used her Twinkle client much?
Her Twinkle client, I have not.
Oh, well, it's called Twinkle. It's Twinkle without the E dot social. She says it's not a throwback. It's not meant to necessarily be a nostalgia play or anything like that. But you can't go to this site and not just help but relive the internet circa 2003. Between those things, and then she also launched a consultancy that she calls Escalay, which was new to me. That is the Nubian word for water wheel. And it was just such a beautiful metaphor for everything that she's trying to do with her work. So if you have not yet caught that episode, I'll drop a link, and it's a great one. But congrats to the North Sky crew.
Yeah, big congrats. I love when I see a screenshot posted of like someone's home screen and it's all different social apps. You can see like right in a row, they got like Blue Sky, Black Sky, Mew. I get North Sky now, you know? There's never too many. It's very nice. Many flowers are blooming.
Exactly. What else we got? You went to Hope. How was that? And for folks who are maybe not familiar with, is it Hackers on Planet Earth?
Hackers on Planet Earth, hope.net. They're also the org associated with 2600 Quarterly, going back many, many years. Really cool conference, actually. They are like a hacker org that deliberately makes you want to think about like phone phreaking and like other such analog technologies from the 70s and 80s. They are modernizing the conference in a way that's also really cool. Like it used to be biannual or even less frequently at times, and they've gone to an annual event now. I'm noticing they're getting a lot more interest from like the Recurse adjacent New York open social tech scene, which is really cool because we've got the App Proto event coming up next weekend in New York, and it's a lot of the same folks who I think are generally excited about what's going on in New York with open source at the moment. But Hope was great. We sponsored. I was manning a booth for most of the weekend. I was between the Wikipedia table and the DSA table, which was very nice. It was good company and just really had a great time. A lot of folks came by the booth to say like, hey, Blue Sky, nice to see you all there. I had the experience not once, not twice, but three times of someone coming by and saying, hey, I'm giving an App Proto talk just down the hall in about an hour and a half or tomorrow if you want to drop by and see it. And I said, that's great. Thank you so much. I will come by and watch your talk. So really nice to have a presence there. Really happy to support the conference. Really cool to see them growing and thriving, and also to see App Proto in the wild.
100%. 2600 is pretty old school, so great to see that event kind of recalibrating a little bit. Between Wikipedia and the DSA feels like such a sweet spot, like metaphorically, for Blue Sky to be there. So really,
yeah, that's a country song if we can write it, I think.
Yeah, totally. And then you mentioned our next news item here, which is the App Proto Community Day. Boy, I'm seeing all the folks that are going to be in New York this weekend. It is going to be, I believe, as the kids say, a vibe. So super excited for that. Our own Brian Newbold is flying across the country. I think he's flying out tonight or tomorrow. He's spending a few days out there. Looks like the weather is going to be perfect. I think we're going to get maybe a little bit of a preview of an early fall day. And maybe even some of your friends from Blue Sky DevRel will show up.
Maybe. It was nice and temperate in New York last weekend. I didn't get a nice big summer rainstorm, which I was kind of sad about. That's the one thing I the West Coast is like the big East Coast rains, but wasn't too hot. It was a balmy like 88 degrees.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Yeah. Those are August in New York is always such a gamble. So
It can be
I'm glad it was pretty good for you. And then the big news from our part of the world over here is that we launched BPS, Blue Sky Protocol Services. Alex, you were instrumental in making that happen. Do you want to walk us through a little bit of your amazing work and work from folks in the team there?
Yeah, I mean, this is my third docs baby is kind of how I'm thinking of it. And, you know, I had to bring three different docs babies to term over the course of the 10 months that I've so far been at this org. First was rewriting the appproto.com site back in February, March to give us a new home for the atmosphere and to make sure that we were talking about our generic tooling in a way that was appropriate and powerful and useful, and also getting our blog migrated over there. Next, when I started working on the old Blue Sky Docs site, which had been sitting conspicuously for a while, I was like, hey, are we maintaining the dedicated Blue Sky Docs? I don't know. Who knows? Let's find out. We've done a few things with that site over time that made them need to be greenfielded a little bit. So for example, we had like the entire reference API documentation there just kind of bolted in to thousands of different individual pages in a DocuSource framework that really wasn't meant for like open API endpoint reference. So carved that out about 2 months ago into endpoints.bsky.app to make that surface a lot more usable. And then spent the last 2 months turning the Blue Sky Docs into the BPS website. And it's a lot lighter weight now. The design's totally refreshed. And because that project wound up spanning most of the summer, we got to do a lot of associated bring up work at the same time as we were working on the BPS docs. So for example, modernizing the Blue Sky SDK was a really big deal that we were overdue on. We wanted to rebase it on Lex and use all the newer patterns that we had. We were kind of telling ourselves back in May, we should really do it, not sure when. And this became a really good opportunity to do that because these are still the Blue Sky SDK docs in addition to other things. And getting that done felt really good. On top of that, the banner feature, of course, is Jetstream V2, which I've seen a lot of folks talking about all weekend, cutting over to Jetstream V2, playing with the replay functionality, getting excited about the new filtering capacity it gives you. And having Jetstream V2 out there is a big, big, big deal for us. It really is emphasizing the scalability of the atmosphere, the kind of high scale access to our data plane, and really talking about what you can do with all the data that's on the network without having to think about backfilling or, you know, putting together infrastructure just to run your own app. So super duper excited about all that. I feel really, really good personally that a lot of our technical debt and our messaging is totally cleaned up. I feel like our docs are like the best surface we've ever had now. And it just feels really good from that point of view to have everything all polished up nicely.
I could not agree more. I think the migration of the Blue Sky Docs, I know that was something that was bugging you in particular, and it's something we've got a little bit of feedback on, but just making that understanding much more clear is great. And then, of course, the launch of Jetstream V2. I think that's a perfect opportunity to bring in our special AMA guests. So I'm going to bring on our very own Jim Calabro. And Jim, welcome to the Off Protocol live stream. I know folks are excited to have you here. So we've got lots to discuss. Jim, what is your title besides man of all things here at Blue Sky?
I'm the head of the platform team here at Blue Sky.
Head of the platform team. And what does that entail? Because I've been to places where platform team is like the API team. And obviously, that's slightly different from how we think about the platform.
Sure. So the platform team is a small but scrappy team where we are responsible for running the foundational infrastructure. So the infrastructure and services that help the atmosphere and the Blue Sky app tick, right? And so we run our hardware, we run our clouds, we are also like largely software engineers, and we sort of help a bunch of other teams find success and do a lot of software development ourselves, especially on the really high scale, high availability, mission critical style software that we ship.
I wander into these channels and I love getting to watch y'all work because my brain does not operate in being able to configure the hardware and run all the operating systems and actual do software engineering. Getting to see you and Austin and Kadokas and the team and operate at that level is just, it's a real pleasure to get to see all work. So
yeah, it's pretty fun. It's a little unique compared to other like platform teams where we are this sort of like dual purpose engine. where, yeah, we are doing a lot of the sort of like traditional platform engineering, but we're also pretty deep in the weeds on a lot of the like application stacks as well. So.
Tell us about Jetstream V2. I know that there was a lot of excitement about that. I know that folks were watching the various repos and seeing your work bubbling up through there. Give us the maybe kind of the high level overview about what people can expect with the new Jetstream.
Sure. So if you've read the docs, which Alex did an absolutely fantastic job on, basically Jetstream is a full network cache and sync service for AtProto. And so when you start up a new Jetstream server, it actually goes out to the full network. It scrapes everything, it crawls and tries to find all the repos it can. It downloads them locally, keeps them in a very highly compressed, very high performance columnar file format, and makes those available to you once it's completed its full network backfill. And so it makes it easy to do the sort of like replay or sync style event stream backfill plus live transition that we've always talked about without like a ton of code on your end, and also makes it extremely fast to run. And so really spent a lot of time trying to make sure that Jetstream is like rarely the bottleneck if you've set it up in a good way and tuned your settings in an intelligent manner. And so the goal of the project is basically like to enable people to sync down AtProto data and do what they want more easily. So that might be building an app view. Some folks actually were making like local first clients. So you can actually just yoink all the Jetstream data straight into the browser and then it's just right there for you. It's kind of interesting. I hadn't actually thought of that until it launched. Another thing would be like interesting network analysis. So if you wanted to say like how many people have posted a stream place comment, just like yoink it down, WC-L and count all the lines. And so yeah, it's this cool little tool that allows you to very quickly and easily just slurp up a bunch of data and do something.
There was obviously a Jetstream V1, and what is it that Jetstream V2 does that developers struggled with that kind of were the impetus to really, because this is kind of a ground up rethink of how Jetstream works. And so what were the things that developers were struggling with or that we wanted to enable that they couldn't do with the previous version?
Sure. So Jetstream V2 is indeed fully backwards compatible with V1. So the same like subscribe endpoint is there with the same JSON format on the WebSocket and everything. But V1 was really awesome and actually like increased adoption a lot. It's just a little bit tedious and you have to like understand a lot of relatively niche concepts to write your own like firehose consumer from scratch perhaps. But anybody can just like subscribe to that WebSocket endpoint and immediately see the AtProto data. And so it makes it very legible and clear and easy. And so Jetstream V1 was a great success from a like developer friendliness standpoint. That being said, it made some trade-offs for sure. So first off, it didn't provide any real like data interrogation mechanism. And so you basically just had to trust the Jetstream server operator. It's an open source thing and you can run it yourself, but it's not really doing authenticated transfer in the authenticated transfer protocol, right?
Right.
But the other thing that we wanted to solve was, and perhaps this is even the more important one, I don't know, they're both pretty important, was it only kept the most recent like day or two of data. I think it was 36 hours is what we had it configured to in our settings. And so you couldn't do this full resync and you couldn't like do your like long history network analysis or build a full app view off the back of Jetstream unless you also first did a like you went out and crawled all the PDSs, all the thousands of PDSs out there and downloaded all the data first. It was a convenient tool to build with, but it had a couple of shortcomings for sure.
I think the other feature that I'm pretty excited about is what we've referred to alternately as kind of this idea of slicing. And I feel like that's something that developers, particularly that are building apps that go beyond just what Blue Sky enables, for instance. Like, you know, if you're building a Blue Sky client, then that's one thing. But if you are, there is a proliferation of standard site readers that are popping up, for instance. And so if you wanted every standard site record, then that was previously kind of non-trivial to build, right?
Yeah, like the way I would probably have done that before is there's a XRPC endpoint list repos by collection. And so you could say, hey, give me all the DIDs that have a standard site document. And then you'd actually have to go out, fetch their full repo, download it, decode it, shove their stuff in the database. And then you can start live tailing the Jetstream or live Firehose instance. And so in that world, it was like, okay, like finding all those repos pretty fast. Doing the downloads of all those repos, not quite as fast. From what we've been seeing on Jetstream, if you're running an instance of it yourself on reasonably fast hardware, you can download and backfill the entirety of standard.site in like 10 seconds or less. And it's like just one like very straightforward little piece of code to write. And similarly, with all those like relatively smaller data slices, it's like sort of the same story. Like if you want to just download your data, in particular, your collections of that you care about there, it's like really just going to be fast. So yeah, it enables a lot of interesting, maybe perhaps like more creative building. Whereas, you know, it just would have been totally infeasible to build any local first stuff by going and fetching all the repos and decoding them within your browser or on a sure. mobile client or something. Now you can actually do that in a reasonable way. And again, like I didn't plan for that or anything. It's just like yeah. somebody had the idea and it just was there and it was cool. So
that's very cool. I love seeing all of the projects that are talking about how they're switching over. There've even been a few in the comments here about, hey, I think Nick G was saying that he's moving Lexicon Garden over this weekend to use Jetstream V2. So, nice. And there've been a few other of those too. So this isn't something that you just like knocked out in a weekend, right?
No, we all met up in January we did a platform/atmosphere team week together. And, you know, we did a lot of yapping that week. And one of the things we yapped about was, man, it'd be really cool if we could, the term we were using was operationalize replay. So for our own internal purposes, when we're building the Blue Sky app view, if we lose one of our data centers, the way that we like the disaster recovery story for that is backfill from the other data center. We're not going out to the actual app proto network and doing a full network backfill from there, even though that's like exactly what it's good at. And there's a bunch of reasons for that, but we were just like, that's like kind of crazy. The second thing we talked about was when we add a new feature to the Blue Sky app view and the social app, and we don't have the data already, it's a little bit of a pain in the butt because we don't just automatically save all the collections that we like don't. We have to like manually write code for each collection we want to shove into our data plane database. And so for instance, when we added the standard.site integration, we had to go out and find all the standard.site documents and download them and shove them in the database. And it's like, okay, well, what if we just had this local cache that was super fast to rip a data stream off of? There's many purposes as to like why we actually decided to do this work, but we basically decided in January we were going to take a swing at this. And then we just spent a lot of time like thinking about it, a lot of time in the design phase. So for most of January and February, we played around with several different design ideas for this. We actually had Claude go out and build a V0 of it, intentionally going to throw it away, right? Like very low quality code, just like, let's go learn something. And so we actually like whipped up an initial prototype that we did like totally toss. And it was, I'm glad we did because it was like a fundamentally unsound design. Like, so we really did that sort of like longer upfront design work and then iterative process to try and nail down that design. And largely the design that we came up with is actually in the Jetstream repo under the docs/readme.md file. That was all we sort of run like an internal RFD process on the platform team where we actually will write down these big files and ask for comments from folks. So like Devin gave a bunch of feedback and Paul gave a bunch of feedback and Daniel and Brian and stuff. And so it was very much like a collaborative effort on what is the design of this thing. And then, you know, we started hiring some more folks. Luckily, I had some more cycles to actually go attack stuff. And so we actually broke ground on it for real in like late May, early June, I'd say. It was closed source for the first few weeks. And then I open sourced it, I think probably late June. Just didn't really tell anybody. Lots of people noticed. And we're chatting about it. We actually got some design feedback from the community as well. So I chatted a lot with Fig about it because Fig is obviously building Hubble, which is sort of similar, but actually goes a little bit further as far as like the data integrity and what it's storing. And so that was like super awesome. Yeah, Fig rules. So there's a lot of good lessons to learn there, I think. I think the big one for me, especially in like the AI age, is like, let's make sure you like really stand by your own design decisions on this thing and take the time to think with your brain rather than just with Claude. And
sure.
One of the things that we say a lot internally, this is not hot take or anything, mid-2026, but like you own your work is like a big thing. Right. That's very important to me and a lot of other folks here. Yeah, it was kind of interesting because it was the first like big project that is like end-to-end greenfield with AI, and I really wanted to not screw it up.
Yeah.
We took that very seriously. Like you'll see in Jetstream, like the majority of the code in there is like tests and like a full like at proto simulator harness thing.
Yeah. Testing against it was actually really nice when I was writing some of those samples for the docs. Like those were really easy to verify end to end, and that felt really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any other questions on that? Anything you want me to go into more detail on it? What would be interesting?
I guess the one for me is was there anything that surprised you about the network? You obviously have a really good understanding about kind of the atmosphere writ large, but did something, I remember as you were in development, you would occasionally just pop into our Slack, like, I can't believe, you know, there would be some account that had even more likes than Patrick Singletary, for instance.
Oh yeah, for sure. There was like, yeah, there's a couple instances of that. If you are doing a bunch of like backfill stuff and you'll just like notice odd things. Like, yeah, there's like ostensibly a normal person. They're a painter actually. And they're like, they would post all their paintings all the time, but they had like millions of likes on their account. And so I don't really know what was going on there. I don't remember their handle or anything either. So like, I can't really explain it. I found it because all my like get repo calls were timing out. And so I was like, ah, shoot, like what's going on here? Oh, but yeah, ostensibly it was like a real person. It's just, they have a like bot or something running for them, or they're just the most likingest person of all time.
Or it's an untapped niche on Paint Sky and none of us are finding the next Van Gogh right under our eyes, you know? Like,
could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jasmine had an internal metric. It was called the Stovey peak or the Stovey limit or something like that. Back in the early day, it was like, how many likes could one conceivably make in a day? And I think the answer was about 5,000 because there was a Blue Sky user who I since think has bounced, but it was like constant liking all day, every day. And it was legitimate user activity. Like they were clicking the button every single time. So I think they were beyond the Stovey peak and I was surprised by that.
Yeah. The rare Patrick Triple Terry.
Yeah. Another fun one was, I'm sure some folks have seen the counting sheep bot.
And I was just going to mention the sheep counting bot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like whenever you're live tailing the fire hose and you just get this like blast of white in your terminal, it's because it's just an enormous number of sheep emojis. It's kind of beautiful. I don't know. There's just all this. There's all these like goofy things out there that you find. Yeah.
The sheep counting bot is a Jen Schiffer production. Yep. If you've never had the pleasure of meeting Jen, if you'll be in New York this weekend, I believe she will be there. She's a delight and definitely one of our more fun contributors to the atmosphere for sure.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what percentage of all at proto data is sheep emojis at this point.
You know, somebody can run that on Jetstream now and figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I've been noodling on in the back of my brain is I want to write a program called AQ. It's like JQ, but for atmosphere. And you could have like a little like language that's like trying to select down to just the stuff, like all the slices you care about. So I don't know that I think somebody else should probably go run with that one, but
totally
trying to just plant the seed out in the universe. So somebody builds it for me.
Excellent. You heard it, everybody. Go build AQ, the CLI to inspect your Jetstream data. We did get some community questions here, so I would love to jump into those as well. There are a few questions about, since you are kind of on the platform, the operation side of things, just about like how any of this works. I think it's generally pretty well known. And you gave a great talk at AtmosphereConf back in March about the fact that we're, you know, it's not like we're running on a cloud provider or something like that. Like we manage our own hardware and things like that. So to the degree that maybe things have been updated or however much you want to share about that, I do think that folks were pretty intrigued to know about how our infrastructure works.
Yeah, so we do run our own metal. We have a couple of cages. We use, this is all stuff you can just go find out on like BGP tools or something, but we own our own ASN and have /22. Yeah, so we run our own network. We run our own servers. The main reason we do it is cost, actually. There's a lot of good reasons to do it. Cost is the big one for me. It would be substantially more expensive to run on Amazon or Google Cloud or other cloud providers. To a certain extent, though, like just philosophically, it's kind of important to own your own destiny on a lot of things as well. I mean, that's kind of for my own personal opinions rather than perhaps the professional opinions. Yeah. So as far as like strategic strategy of running our own gear, I think it's been a smashing success. Like, it's pretty important that AppPreto runs in a cost-effective manner. Otherwise, this is just going to be hard to do. And so we've managed to keep our costs to a minimum while also being able to operate this gear with kind of a skeleton crew, if I'm being honest. Like, it's just a couple of us that handle this sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm very excited. We actually just landed to hire the other day, Sarah. She rules. And so we'll have a little bit more help on board. So very excited about that. It's a ton of work. It's a lot of specialized work. And it is, to a certain extent, the term I always use that is like sort of true, half true in this particular case, is undifferentiated heavy lifting, to use the corporate buzzword that everybody's buzzing about. It is a lot of heavy lifting, and it feels undifferentiated until you look at like what your AWS bill would be if you actually were fully in the cloud. Yeah, I think the big things that we need to improve on and we're starting to make inroads on are having it be much more hands-off. So like automatically failing over certain systems if something goes amiss, like if a drive dies, it should just fail over seamlessly to another machine, right? We just sort of weren't set up with that from the beginning, and now we're starting to retrofit a lot of stuff onto auto-scaling systems, even on-prem, right? So yeah, I'd say it's been a really great success. It's a lot of fun. It's hard to buy hardware this year, though. We bought all our hardware before all the RAM crisis stuff. So very much indebted to...
Eli was pointing that out, that the genius of stocking up before the RAM spike hit. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was... I was going to say, this is all very modern and novel, like the fact that like we are trying to take back our own infra at a time when that has become cost-effective, but is also aligned ideologically with where we're at. And then I realized that, oh, all of a sudden, it's not that cost effective again. And so like it was like a narrow window where it was both. Yeah. And maybe now we're just back to it being, you know, one and the other. But who knows what the future holds? Like, it's really...
Yeah, the monetization strategy is actually just server hardware arbitrage.
Yeah. Austin out there selling sticks of RAM.
Yeah, no comment.
Oh, you know, here's actually an interesting one from Andre Halili. Does the Blue Sky dev team also plan to run production testing on third-party PDS implementations to help with spec conformance, similar with web platform tests for browsers?
I love that idea. We've chatted about it a million times. I've seen several people in the community already do it. And so I would highly recommend checking out some initiatives from other folks. Okay, who did that? Mary? Might have been Mary.
That'd be my first guess.
I haven't chatted with anybody about this in a while, but I actually saw one go by just yesterday as well on Tangled. I think it's a great idea. I think it's actually like super important that we have that. I don't know about Blue Sky itself doing that. I'm actually probably the wrong person to ask about that. That's probably a Devin or Brian question.
I think
that's very, very important for sure, especially in the age of AI, where it's like the better the tests, the better the agents do. And
yeah, exactly. So we had a gaggle of questions from serial liker Patrick Singletary. So I'll try to get some of these. A lot of these are kind of spec-driven questions. And so, you know, to the degree that we can get specific with things, like how many accounts do we host on a server?
Roughly 500,000 most of the time. We just had internal issues at one point, and so there's two PDSs out there that are closer to like 800,000 or 900,000. And so, yeah, roughly 500,000. Not really a great reason for that number. I think it was just a conservative estimate from the beginning. If you were running your own PDSs of that size, you could go much higher. There's some nice properties to it with, like, in particular with the subscribe repos. If you wanted to backfill and do like all the get repo rate limiting, it's kind of nice to be able to spread that out across a bunch of hosts rather than like a single host. But that's where we put our distribution at the moment.
Those are your big mushrooms, you know, your portobellos, your humongous fungus.
Yeah.
Do we have like a special server for massive accounts? So you've got an account that's got... I guess in some ways it wouldn't be necessary because, you know, just the nature of the protocol, you don't really need that in the way that you might on like a Twitter or something like that, right?
Correct. No, we don't have any special servers for massive accounts. But we do tend to see like a lot of the earlier servers are like super engagey, and a lot of the folks who came on early are really sticky. And so like Morel, one of the earliest servers, is like super hot all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like artifacts of the Blue Sky user base rather than anything about AppPreto and the strategy there that sort of drives usage of all the PDSs. Yeah, Eli actually said Magic is one of them instead of Cyclobin. Magic is kind of a fun one. Magic is a special snowflake in the Mushroom PDS world because that one actually runs on ZFS, which is goofy. It was done as an experiment. I think we just wanted, this was actually before I started, but it's like, I think we just wanted to prove that we could use a bunch of file systems because ordinarily I think we run them on XFS.
I've always wanted psilocybin to just like, you know, randomize the words in your posts or something like that before it sent them out just for fun. Nobody's taken me up on that one yet. But hey, Patrick had a few other questions that are a little bit goofy. Do we allow Paul to touch anything? So Paul's doing a lot more CTO level things, but you know, he gets in there. He gets into the gut. He's more on the Addy side of things too, right?
Yeah, for the time being, he's doing a lot of like exploration style work. But in general, yeah, like my philosophy is like all developers should be able to touch everything they need to do their job. Like let's just put that out there. Paul is logging into our POPs to do stuff for sure.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, it helps especially if you want to do like really heavy duty performance testing. You shouldn't be doing that on a MacBook. Go grab one of our big spare Linux machines and run it there, you know.
For Jetstream throughput testing, I know that came up quite a bit where it was just like, how fast can this thing go with a direct connection, right? And the answer was very, very, very fast.
Those were the numbers that I posted were definitely like ideal case scenario, right? Running on localhost on an enormous server. And so, you know, you're not going to get that unless you're like on a huge server. I would love if people actually like took that and beat me. I think I know it's possible, right? So almost all the performance of the Jetstream user experience actually came from client optimizations. And so what I'm super interested in is like a Rust client or a C++ client, because like I spent a ton of time fighting the Go garbage collector. And and so I've been impressed with TypeScript as well. TypeScript has been putting up some numbers. And so, you know, like if you're so inclined, go try and write a Rust client and see if you can beat 40 million. Because I think it's entirely possible for sure.
That's the second nerd snipe today. So I fully expect both of these by the end of the week. While we're talking about configurations and things like that, like what does a server that hosts 500,000 accounts look like roughly? Like if somebody were spinning up their own service today and they wanted to go out and buy the hardware, what would you recommend they think about in terms of speccing? Is it like, do you want to optimize more for RAM? Is it more like processor? How should folks think about that?
In general, it's pretty lightweight. So we do wildly overspec them, not for any particularly good reason. It's just only a little bit more money. And so why not? The PDS fleet is really cheap to operate from a OpEx perspective. So yeah, I think our typical server is something like 64 cores, maybe 128 gigs of RAM, maybe 256. It sort of depends when we bought it because we've like sort of increased the bar over time. Typically they have a few terabytes of RAM, a few terabytes of storage and a gigabit up down as far as like network bandwidth goes. The things I'd say to optimize for are actually storage. Like the good thing is you can always like move that around pretty easily, right? Like if you're going to be hosting a really hot, large PDS for a long time, you're eventually going to run out of storage space. And so like a couple times now we've implemented like, I didn't do this work personally or anything, but like folks have gone in and like done some like compression magic to like, cause like there were some times where like Morel was getting up to like 80, 90% disk usage. And it's like, okay, we're going to have to do something about this. And luckily there's some compression techniques that we applied on the PDS distro itself. And so it just like shrunk it down back to like 50. Someday we're going to have to migrate again once it gets bigger. And at that time, just get a bigger disk. It doesn't really need a ton of RAM or CPU. I'd say bandwidth and storage are the main ones.
I am curious what like the highest profile, oops, the disk filled up incident has been in like cloud computing history. Because you know they're out there, right? Where it's like, uh-oh.
I'm not sure off the top of my head as far as like disk full. No. One of our bits of deep lore that I actually didn't even mention was one of the things about the disaster recovery and the relay scenario for Blue Sky history, or at Proto history rather, is the relay actually used to be fully archival. So like each relay kept a full copy of all the data for quite a while. We just filled that up. And we had some pretty enormous disks at the time and we just filled it. And so that's why the relay went to just keeping a few days worth of data. And then that's when we started talking Sync 1.1 as well. So you could do like incremental, the like proof by induction style verification of records. And so that was actually something we lost and now something we have again with Jetstream. And so I'm very excited about that. We're filling that disk up. I think, I don't know if it ever hit actually 100%. We definitely have had some issues where servers have hit 100%. You know, nothing you can't solve pretty easily. I think our like over the air server filled up one day, like the iOS and Android APK images that we like send over to clients. It's just, nobody was looking at it and didn't have metrics, didn't have alerts. It was a total pet. Now it's not a pet and back by S3. So hopefully they don't run out of storage because that'd be really bad.
A few folks in the comments here are posting their Jetstream clients. And so we've got a, you know, predictably, Nick G has posted a Rust version and Nate has posted a Zig version, of course. And so we'll see how those end up looking performance-wise. A great question here from Oma Siri, which is, I want the failure budget story. So when a large account spike hits, does the pain show up as stale timelines, slow repo sync, moderation backlog? Users just call all of that, the app is slow. So, you know, when we are experiencing those kind of pain points, what are some of the root causes for that?
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by a large account spike. So what are you saying, like adding a lot more users all at once?
I know in various points in Blue Sky history, there's after the 2024 election, I think there was a month of that, right? Or
yeah.
6 months.
I had joined after that, just to be clear, but for a period, we were adding a million users signing up a day. And a lot of that shows up as hot shard problems. So let me go ahead and drop a jazzco.dev. And so this is a lot of the story of like how we have adapted and protected ourselves from spikes. So what ends up happening is the write workload of App Proto in general can be solved by policy. So relay rate limits, right? So if there is a really big spammy DID, it's just not going to make it through the relay at a certain point, and your write workload is kind of a little bit protected when you're building an app view. That's like partially true, right? Like there's ways around that. Like it's a little bit more subtle. But the really hard thing actually in the app view is the reads. We do like millions of queries a second to our Scylla database, and we keep many millions more off of it with Bloom filters, and memcache is enormous for us. But then the problem is like if, say there's like a very popular account that shows up a lot with like AOC is like the kind of canonical example where somebody is reading AOC's posts over and over again. What ends up happening on the database is like that particular shard gets really hot, and then everybody else who is like on that shard with AOC also slows down, and it just causes like catastrophic like failure. And so we put in a lot of caches to keep load off of the database and Bloom filters and stuff like that.
Got it. All right. You know, we've actually got a question here from the chat. So would we see a future in which Jetstream's WebSockets could scale out like a consumer group? This is from Amelia.
I actually have thought about that a lot, not in terms of like Jetstream itself, but I would love to have a high availability, horizontally scalable consumer of App Proto. Probably not anytime soon, though. Like that's kind of a lot of work. We do run a fair bit of Kafka internally just for like shuffling bytes around as well. And so probably if I was to do that, I would just say like, just dump it onto Kafka and go from there. But you know, that's obviously not going to meet a lot of needs for a lot of use cases. The WebSocket one, definitely it'll work. The big long, the state snapshot, like the like big backfill phase, that doesn't really map, I don't think. Yeah, so when I've been writing like consumers of the Firehose or Jetstream myself, what I do is I actually have this like voting scheme where a lot of my servers, like if I have five servers running, they take like a distributed lock and one of them is allowed to actually consume the Firehose. And then if that process goes down, it loses the lock, automatically fails over to another one. And so you're promoting one of them to be the leader, basically.
I think we're getting to the end of the questions. If you had a question that I missed, go ahead and ask it now. We're also getting close to the end of our time here, but anything else that you feel like folks should know coming into this, out of this?
One thing I'd say is like, this is just like the beginning of Jetstream V2, right? Like it's just shipped, right? This is how we're going to be building internally. Pretty much everything is going to be retooled on top of this. And so, yeah, definitely if you have thoughts, let us know.
Sweet. You know, another one familiar here. How do you consume from multiple Jetstream servers at once to counter DDoS attacks and the like?
I don't think Jetstream and DDoS are like, if you're getting DDoS, Jetstream is probably not the like first thing you're looking at. It's usually like, oh crap, the site's down. When you get if you're running around hardware and you get a DDoS attack, you sort of just have to have a vendor who's bigger than the people who are attacking you. And so we partnered with a company who is basically like a layer in between us and them. There's several big players out there. Cloudflare is one, Akamai is another, Fastly. We're partnered with a company called Path.net. They are fantastic to work with. And they offer protection at like multiple layers of the network stack. Yeah, you sort of have to have that in place as like a defense mechanism. Or you got to build it yourself, right? Like stand up like 30 to 50 small POPs all around the world and just like have a giant network pipe on each of them and just soak it up and pass the clean traffic through to your backends.
Got it. Amelia's clarifying, you know, how do you fail over between Jetstream hosts is maybe a better
characterization. So one of the concessions we made in Jetstream V2 versus V1 is that when you're doing the big like snapshot phase, like the big file download phase, you can't swap between instances. If you were to go down in that limited window, you would need to just redo your whole backfill. But then once you're on the live consumer portion and you're using the WebSocket, it's all timestamp based. So there's this funny little trick we do with the cursors that you pass into Jetstream where the Unix timestamp microseconds and the actual cursor values we assign are just like totally distinct number ranges. It maintains backwards compatibility with Jetstream V1, which was all timestamp based. And now you can either use timestamps or assign cursor values for all your individual events because they're just non-overlapping just numerically, which is kind of fun. And so if you account for a little bit of clock drift, you can swap between the live, the subscribe events endpoint between one Jetstream server and another. So you just say like, hey, like this is my timestamp right now. I'm just going to rewind by like a second or like 10 seconds or something and just swap to a different one. And I'm going to double up some events and just make sure that they're idempotent as you're writing them. And it should automatically, like you should be able to swap from the East Coast one to the West Coast if you're doing the live stream very seamlessly, but not with the big backfill phase.
How many spatio-temporal disasters would have to happen for our cursor range to overlap with Unix timestamps?
Well, the Unix timestamp advances once per microsecond, so it would have to be writing a lot more than one per microsecond,
all right, something
which
to
may
aspire to.
Be a thing in the age of AI. we have to talk about how much like total disk space is out there in the universe. I was chatting with Devin about that last night. It's like, I think that we would run out of bits before we advance to that cursor state.
We have had a couple of other questions come in. So one is about kind of like the ordering of Jetstream. And so are they always guaranteed to be first event when receiving events for a new repo, or is it somewhat random?
The event ordering is always, it's strictly ordered per repo. So all the events for a given repo are stored in the order that they were created. No global ordering. Unfortunately, that would actually make things a lot easier if we had like some strict like global ordering.
Select all, sort by.
Yeah, kind of. But obviously that's like not possible. So it's stored in the order of the user's repo. And cool. So there's a lot of like interesting interleaving stuff that happens as part of that. But if you're just writing like, give me all the events for this DID, it's guaranteed to be in the order that they were originally created.
And then Kuba is asking, if someone is using Jetstream V1 right now, is there any benefit from switching to the V2 API without implementing the backfill support part?
Totally. So that's a great question. So the V2 API, the actual XRPC endpoint, subscribe events, it actually implements a full like sync 1.1 style consumer, where if it detects that there's a skip in the event stream or something, or if there's like a signature mismatch, or if a sync event comes over the network, it will actually repair that and send those events down to the client if they desire them, right? And so if you're trying to build a really robust app view, that is kind of the way to go. One of the things that's been a little bit goofy about sync 1.1 is it hasn't seen like enormous adoption amongst the various consumers out there. Like our app view wasn't even using it. Like Jetstream V1 wasn't using it. Like Tap was kind of the first thing that actually fully correctly implemented sync 1.1. And so we were using that a little bit of an example to make sure that that also was implemented correctly in Jetstream. And so it's much more like self-healing, right? So if there's just like some goofy, like let's say your PDS just like has like, you accidentally like, I don't know, your PDS hoster has some downtime or something and you screw up your firewall or whatever and you emit like some junk events, using the new endpoint will correctly self-heal that. Whereas the old endpoint is strictly backwards compatible with Jetstream V1. And so it doesn't self-heal on purpose.
And then I think this will be a good one to end on is, what are the things that you would love to see people build that don't yet exist that can now exist in a world where Jetstream V2 is here?
I don't know. Like the app printer is like a big old goofy Petri dish. And like it's really like very emergent, right? And so I don't think I can actually predict what other folks are going to go build. I don't know. Surprise me.
Surprise me. That's I think that's the perfect answer. So big old goofy Petri dish. Love it.
Yeah.
Jim, can't thank you enough for joining the AMA. And
thanks for having me on. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You're at collabro.io, if I remember correctly, on yes. online there. Get at Jim. Be kind. You'll have no idea how not to use a quadism, but how load-bearing Jim is to making sure that all this stuff works. So
yeah, I'm very tired.
Yes, it's all good, it's though. Been a week. So excellent. Really appreciate you taking the time. And we'll see everybody in a couple of weeks. We've got some more fun, exciting episodes. And we've got another AMA coming up that will be off our usual schedule. So you're going to see us with another special guest here real soon. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you.
Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget, we live stream every other Wednesday on StreamPlace, of course. For more about App Protocol and an archive of this show, head to @proto.com. Off Protocol is a production of the Blue Sky Developer Relations Team. Our theme music was composed and produced by Salim Rushamwala.